My guest today is Andy du Plessis, the Managing Director of Food Forward SA, a non-profit organization that is dedicated to reducing food waste and combating hunger in South Africa. Food Forward SA works with a network of food donors, volunteers, and beneficiary organizations to collect surplus food from retailers, farmers, and manufacturers, then distributes that food to vulnerable communities across the country. Their mission is to ensure that no one goes hungry, while also promoting sustainable food systems and reducing the environmental impact of food waste. Let's hear from one of our leading voices in the fight against food waste and hunger in South Africa.
Welcome to the Mbali Nwoko podcast, where we explore the cutting edge of sustainable agriculture and the latest innovations in the industry. Join us as we have conversations with industry experts from farmers, researchers, leaders, and policymakers about the challenges and opportunities facing the agriculture sector. Whether you're a seasoned farmer, a curious consumer, or just looking to learn more about where your food comes from, this is the podcast for you. Let's dive in and discover the future of farming together.
Right. Andy, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I've read a lot about Food Forward South Africa, and I'm just amazed at the growth that the organization has been able to achieve over the years. So, I just want to find out first and foremost, what motivated the founding of Food Forward South Africa, and how has the organization grown and evolved over the years?
Yes, thank you, Mbali, very much for having us. We love to just share more about the work we do, so thank you for the opportunity. So Food Forward South Africa started in 2009 for two specific reasons. Well, the first was because there were huge amounts of food that were a surplus, edible, but being dumped into landfill. There was an opportunity seen here where we could have used that surplus food if it were intercepted timeously to be able to address the problem of food insecurity, which is the second issue of why our organization was formed, to address this problem of food insecurity at scale, given the huge amount of inequality, poverty, and malnutrition across our country. So we're trying to solve two problems, and I suppose inadvertently solve a third. The first is reduce food loss and waste, which also will in turn save the environment, and it will positively impact on the climate change debacle. And the second is redressing or addressing short-term hunger and food insecurity at scale.
Yeah, definitely food waste is a huge problem in our country. And I think I attended a conference about 3 years ago where they had the CEO, the then CEO of the Johannesburg Fresh Produce Market. And he mentioned hundreds of tons of food that the Joburg Market disposes on a monthly basis or on an annual basis. And the amounts were quite alarming, because when you think about it, that's actually farmers' products. So definitely. What can you tell me about how Food Forward South Africa works to recover the surplus of food? So as you see that food waste is a problem in the sector, how do you recover that food? Do you then take that food, process it, and turn it into something else? What are the processes thereof with how you guys work?
Yeah, so I think firstly the first thing we need to share is that the CSIR updated the technical report on food loss and waste in 2021, and it showed that or confirmed rather that more than 10 million tons of food was lost or wasted, costing our economy in excess of 64 billion rand. But they actually were able to pinpoint where along the food value chain the excesses are and to what degree. So we know that in the agri sector there's around 8% of food loss and waste. So agri, we're talking about on farms during harvesting, about 8% is lost. Then post-harvest handling, food processing, that's around 15% or so. And then manufacturing is the big one, 49% on the manufacturing side, huge amounts of surplus waste. And then, of course, on the post-consumer side on the household side, there's about 15% of food loss and waste there. So we know where the bulk of the food loss and waste lies, and we know the reasons for these things like overproduction, over-ordering, incorrectly labeled goods, damaged goods, things go a lot wrong along the conveyor belt with regards to labeling, for example, etc. These are all reasons why food is surplus. But there's this misconception when we talk about surplus food, because South Africa doesn't really understand the complexity of this food loss and waste volume, and they immediately think that when we talk about food surplus, we think about substandard food. We're talking about expired food and food not fit for human consumption, and this is absolutely far from that case. What we usually recover from our food supply chain partners is edible, well within date surplus food. So a lot of canned goods, a lot of non-perishable groceries, a lot of starches, a lot of frozen meat products, for example, that we are able to collect along the food supply chain, because there are huge amounts of supply chain disruptions that take place that are unavoidable and in many times unforeseen throughout that food value chain across South Africa.
And so you recover all these foods, and then what happens to the food items once you've recovered them?
Yeah, so on farms, for example, we have a program called Second Harvest, where while the farmer is harvesting, he would tell us to come and collect X amount of bins of fresh produce, whether it's fruits or vegetables. So our trucks would go to that farm or facility, and in other instances, they drop it off at our facility, and then we bring that into our warehouses across the country. We check it, sort it, store it, and then we immediately redistribute that food onto nonprofit organizations. There's just a huge cost involved to process food, and of course, a huge amount of legislative requirements, so we don't get involved on the processing side of food. We simply recover and redistribute that food onwards. And that's what we call warehouse food banking. Food banking is a model that's practiced all across the world, especially in Europe and the United States, this model called food banking, where we're able to recover. And because the food is free, the only cost to us is to be able to collect that food and redistribute that food. And last financial year, our cost per meal was a mere 56 cents, which is just, you know, the most economical way to redress the problem of food insecurity at scale. So that food comes into our warehouses, check it, sort it, store it, and then we redistribute that to 2,750 registered nonprofit organizations that have been vetted by us and that have ongoing not only feeding programs, but developmental programs. So a lot of organizations, more than 75% of the organizations we support, focus on education, skills development, care for abused women, orphans and vulnerable children, health-focused beneficiary organizations, and specifically focus on malnourished children, given the huge amount of malnutrition in South Africa. And then we have a platform called Food Share, whereby we connect our retail partners' stores to our local beneficiary organizations, those 2,750 organizations across the country. So we connect them to Woolworths stores, Pick and Pay stores, and Food Lovers Market stores, and Macro Massmart stores across the country. And they also collect edible surplus food at store level on the day, across the country, so that we are able to recover as much food so that we avoid and divert food going to landfills that's still edible and usable.
Yeah. And so how do you procure the food from the various stores and to the farmers? Is it in a form of donation? And then on the flip side of the coin is, how do the nonprofit organization obtain the food from the different food forward warehouses? Do they obtain the food by buying the food, or do you also donate the food onto them once they've been carefully vetted?
Yeah, so the food donor partners that donate into us, we have over 100 food donors. So farmers, manufacturers, retail partners like Pick and Pay, Food Lovers Market, Mass Discounters, Woolworths, etc. All of these food donor partners, they donate the food to us free of charge. And although the food is free, they're actually making an immediate saving on their bottom line because that food would have been written off anyway and dumped in landfill. So, and it costs millions of rands to be able to dump and incinerate that stock. So by diverting that food away from landfill and donating it to organizations like Food Forward SA, we're able to save their money and give them an 18A tax certificate for that donation and then use that fee to feed people. It's a win-win for the business, for Food Forward SA. And then the charities that receive our food, they have to make an application. And we've got quite a strict vetting process. So you have to be a registered a nonprofit organization with the Department of Social Development. You actually have to have verifiable services. We come out and do unannounced visits once we've received your application. And only once we've verified that you do exist, that you offer verifiable services, only then do we approve you. And then once you are approved, we do unannounced visits during the course of the year as well to make sure that the food reaches the intended beneficiaries.
Ah, that's amazing. And so is there a process as well where you ensure that the nonprofit organizations do not sell that food at the end of the day? I can imagine, you know, there's a lot of NPCs, NPOs out there who are supporting a number of people. I mean, you mentioned children, women abused,
youth care facilities.
Exactly. Yeah. So how do you then ensure that, you know, those organizations also don't go out and sell the food as well, especially maybe to schools?
Yes, absolutely. So we have an entire department of about 7 or 8 staff dedicated to making sure that the onboarding process of beneficiary organizations is carefully vetted. So that we only partner with really credible organizations that have verifiable services into the community. So, and part of that vetting process is we actually go into the community, we interview neighbors, we interview local businesses to double check and make sure that these organizations are actually operating and are offering verifiable services. And then, as I say, we do unannounced visits at the organization and we make sure that, you know, the food is stored, that we donate is stored correctly, that they're cooking under hygienic conditions, and that we interview the beneficiaries receiving the food and we say to them, are you getting a meal every single day, or you're getting a meal at least 3 days a week, which is our criteria. And so we interview the beneficiaries, and that way we safeguard to make sure that the food is not being sold, is not being used other than for the intended purpose.
Yeah, this is amazing still. I'm excited about your business model. And, you know, with all the good efforts that you're making and having good partners, you know, I mean, you've got it locked down from primary agri to retail. You've got a warehouse, you've got a logistic. It sounds like you've got a very organized logistic plan and process in place.
Yeah.
What challenges are you currently facing?
So I think the major challenge for us as an organization is that we undertake this work where we support, where we recover food from the food value chain, and then we redistribute that to nearly 3,000 organizations reaching close to 1 million people on a daily basis. But the main challenge is government is not supporting our work. Now, you know, we've got huge amounts of problems with government underspending, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, corruption, maladministration. And we just think if government supported our work, we are able to, one, collect more food, two, reduce the amount of food ending up in landfill, and in other words, recover more of that 10 million tons of food, and thereby mitigating against climate change and the environmental impact of food loss and waste. But third, we are able then, if we were to recover just 5 million tons of that food, of that 10 million tons that is lost or wasted, we could provide 2 meals a day to the 30 million people that are food insecure today across South Africa. So government is missing out of our equation. We get support from corporates, trusts, foundations, and of course, caring individuals that support our work financially. But we do need government to take responsibility, to realize that they are not able to address this problem of food insecurity without social partners like Food Forward SA. And because we have reach, because we've got impact, because we've got a warehouse and logistics infrastructure like no other across the country, you know, we feel government should recognize our work and should be supporting our work. So that's one of the major challenges that we face. The second major challenge is that there are still too many food manufacturers and people in that food value chain or organizations in the food value chain that are not donating their surplus food onward to organizations like Food Forward SA. And this is problematic for us. We feel that it's good, not only good for your business, but it's good business. It's ethical business to be able to donate your surplus food rather than dumping it in landfill and getting a write-off from your insurer against that. So we feel more food owners and throughout the farmers, wholesalers, retailers and manufacturers, we need more role players to donate that surplus food to organizations like Food Forward SA so that we can make sure we get access to more surplus food to donate onwards to our beneficiary organizations. I should have mentioned this earlier, but all the organizations that get food from us, they get that 2,750. They get food every single month from us, but we don't charge them for that. We give the food, they get that food at no cost to them. They only pay a monthly membership fee, which is minuscule in comparison to that. So those are some of the challenges we face. So, you know, financially, it's quite, although the model is cost effective, to be able to reach the people we do across South Africa, including the distant rural areas through our model, it's important that financially we get more financial partners on board.
Yeah. You mentioned government, the lack of government support. So if we had to name specifics, what are the specific things within your key operations where you would like some sort of government assistance?
Yeah, so firstly, we because our model recovers edible surplus food, it costs us quite a bit of money to maintain warehouses. We've got 9 warehouses now, 1 warehouse in every single province. Mm-hmm. And we've got a fleet of vehicles that runs on fuel and that needs drivers and general workers to be on board them. And then we've got a specific program called our Mobile Rural Depot Program. So in urban centers where our warehouses are, beneficiary organizations in close proximity, they come and fetch their food on a monthly basis from us because it's quite close by. But in rural communities that are 4, 5, 6, 8 hours sometimes away, it's mm-hmm. just cost prohibitive for them to come and collect food here. So we actually take the food to them. We've got a list of the 100 poorest municipalities across the country, and we've got now so far 38 of those rural communities that are on our Mobile Rural Depot program, where we take food into rural communities. So our trucks drive for 4, 5, 6, sometimes 8 hours to get to a location to drop food off, and there's quite a bit of costs involved in that as well. So our view is, because the food is free, this operational cost, which costs us just 56 cents our cost per meal, we feel that those are the costs government should be able to support so that we can create better access to food and get more access to more food to donate onwards.
Yeah, so it's more of redirecting funds that are, you know, wastefully spent on other things to initiatives like yours.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, the government has, for the Department of Social Development, for example, they have the social grants assistance program. But mm-hmm. we all know that the social grant is insufficient for a family that's totally dependent on one social grant. You know, they can't survive on that social grant for a whole month. And our view is we can supplement what government is trying to do through the social grant by making sure people have access to affordable and healthy food. That's the other thing. More than 90% of the food that we recover, and this is all donated food, right? More than 90% of that food is nutritious food, because we are targeting the food value chain partners like dairy, like the protein and meat, like the starches that have a nutritional component to them. So we feel we are not only addressing short-term hunger, we are actually impact nutritional status of people here, so that they are healthier, they are able to go and look for work, and that we have a stronger and healthier workforce into the future.
Yeah. So tell me, Andy, how has COVID-19, the pandemic specifically, impacted Food Forward South Africa's operation? And how have you guys responded to this crisis?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting in that during that COVID period where everything shut down, I will not forget it. Immediately on the day before lockdown started, we had to make application to be able to continue services. In other words, get the exemptions, and we got them at midnight that night. So, you know, while everything was shut down, everybody now realized that there were millions of people that were not able to earn an income, so they couldn't buy food. And so only then did they realize how important food security is and how vulnerable many South Africans are that live day to day. And so this is where organizations like Food Forward, I say, actually, where people realize and paid attention and said, you know what, food security is a big problem here. How do we address this? So it was a blessing in that we got quite a bit of financial support from corporates and individuals that said, we acknowledge this is a problem, and we'd like to support your work. So we did get quite a bit of financial support during that first year in 2020, when we had the worst of COVID really going on, and for a year after that. But it was also the year in which we started our massive growth plan, because we had this financial support. So we moved from having five warehouses to having nine warehouses across the country. Mm. We had a fleet of, we nearly doubled our fleet of vehicles from 18 to 35. We almost doubled our staff complement, and we more than doubled our increase and reach and impact. So prior to COVID, we were supporting about 500 registered nonprofit organizations. And today, like I said, we're supporting 2,750. So that's more than a fivefold growth in the last 2 years since COVID. And like I said, we were that 500 organizations were reaching about 275,000 vulnerable people. Today, we're reaching 985,000 vulnerable people across South Africa. So in the last 2 years of COVID, we actually had our largest growth spurt in Bali.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a couple of food items, Andy, that you are in need of. You know, as one of the challenges, you said manufacturing companies are not partnering with organizations such as yours, and you mentioned in that same sentence, staple foods, etc. So I'm just thinking, there must be manufacturing companies that are manufacturing staple foods. Then there's farmers and retailers that are donating perishable food products. And you also mentioned earlier on tin food, you know. What other food items, over and above those that you've mentioned, that you've seen a critical demand in that you would like to distribute to your nonprofit organization? So which food items are seriously lacking in your operations that you are in dire need of based on the requests from the nonprofits?
Yeah, so I think from our perspective, because we run warehouses, and although we have cold storage facilities, non-perishable groceries are desperately needed. So canned goods, things, starches like rice and macaroni, and tinned goods, of course, like baked beans and tuna, and those kind of products are really what we need desperately. But we also realize that in the dairy sector, we get huge support from Danone and Parmalat, which is great. But there are other dairy actors that are dumping things like yogurts and milk. We've seen it in the news when we have these supply chain disruptions like load shedding other things. So even dairy products and things like that, even if it's like 5 days before expiry or before the end of its best before, we can actually get that in and it goes out the very next day, because of our massive distribution capacity across the country. So anything non-perishable, anything nutritious like dairy products, for example, as well as protein sources like meat and soya and beans, sugar beans, samp, rice, those products are golden and definitely needed for the work we do. I think it's important also maybe to mention at this point that although food banking itself is an international model across South Africa, in South Africa, we do not have a food donations policy at all. And this is one of the limiting factors of why manufacturers and food value chain suppliers actually don't want to donate, because liability concerns. And this is why Food Forward South Africa has launched a food donations policy recommendation initiative to government to challenge government and say, we have a problem of food insecurity, we have a huge problem of food loss and waste, and we've got, and we can address both problems by having adopting a food donations policy or changing our current legislation. And this is where the thrust of the low-hanging fruit lies for us in Bali.
Yeah, because I'm even thinking, you know, are you allowed to donate food past its sell-by date? You know, do those things come into play around food safety? And what happens, you know, if the NPOs, NPCs say, you know, we receive food, but past its expiry date, its expiry date. Do you guys meet those challenges sometimes?
Yeah, so because we do not have a food donations policy, we are actually governed by the Consumer Protection Act and by the what's called the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act. And because of those acts, we are not allowed to distribute food that is expired at all. So we do not distribute food that is expired, but we are able to distribute food that is after its best before or recommended date. And what that means is because quite a lot of our foods do not have an expiry date, but a rather recommended date, because nobody can actually say for sure when this product will be expired, we can donate food past its best before date. And this is a piece of a guideline that has been adopted by the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa with input from the Department of Health, the Department of Trade and Industry, as well as the Department of Agriculture and Social Development. So I feel that we're on the right track here in terms of where we are going towards a food donations policy. But as it stands today, we do not redistribute anything that is expired. Whereas in the United States and in many parts of Europe, like France, Italy, and other countries, they actually donate any kinds of food as long as it is still edible and usable.
Yeah. Andy, I just want to know, you know, with the various stakeholders and partners that you work with, have you guys considered working with maybe individual households? And I don't know how that would work. I'm just putting it out there because, again, you know, over and above farms or manufacturing companies, retailers, etc., you get individual households who waste also quite a lot of food. How can we involve individual households to work with Food Forward South Africa?
Yeah. Household food waste is a growing problem, actually. You know, when the CSIR first did this study a few years ago, I think in 2013 it was, the household food waste was sitting at around 8%. Today, it's now sitting at 15%. So we know that household food waste is a growing problem. But because our infrastructure is set up for bulk collections and bulk deliveries, because we've got 5-ton trucks, 8-ton trucks, 14-ton trucks, 20-ton vehicles, etc., we are only set up to take in bulk goods. However, what we do try and do is connect households with our local beneficiary organizations so that a household that has surplus, and we encourage households to check their fridges and their pantries every other day to make sure that the food there is still good for human consumption, that it's within the expiry dates. Because what households tend to do is if they see the thing is close to expiry, they just throw it in the can and it may still be good for human consumption. So yeah. From a household perspective, we want to encourage people to firstly only buy what you need for a few days. Don't go for these bulk buying things where you buy massive big bulks and then the stuff is rotten after a few days and you only pick it up when it is too late. So buy only what you need for a few days. Buy local and try and check your fridge and your pantry on a regular basis to reduce that food loss and waste at a household level. But also on a regular basis, you know, try and clear out what's usable and edible and donate that onwards to your local charity that's close by to you.
On the flip side of that, Andy, is I'm just also thinking now, merging what we saw about 3 years ago with COVID-19 and, you know, organizations like yourself exist and have got such a sophisticated model, you know, to get food to where it needs to be. Now, just bear with me here. I'm just thinking as well, do you sometimes maybe get backlash of perhaps creating a dependent society mm-hmm. around mm-hmm. food. I mean, you saw with COVID-19, yeah. a lot of people were starving. So over and above the NPOs and NPCs that or charity organizations that you work with, what about individual households that have come forward to Food Forward South Africa and say, I'm hungry? You know, how do we balance the line between hunger, food insecurity, but also not trying to create a society that is dependent on the likes of Food Forward to feed them, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. I totally get what you're saying, and I'm in total agreement. I think we have to be careful of encouraging models that creates dependency. We want to try and create, an individual spirit that can thrive on their own and that can reach to and have agency to be able to change their own circumstances. So I'm 100% with you. The unique thing about our model, though, is that more than 75% of the organizations we support, that food goes into communities, to organizations working in communities in the areas of education. So early childhood development center, after school care programs, where kids are, where they do homework with kids, they keep the kids off the street. Youth centers, we support a lot of organizations that have rehab programs, that have developmental programs for youth, skills development for youth. Some of the organizations we support teach youth to become barristers and then have been taken up by various coffee shops across South Africa. Others are taught how to do welding and carpentry. So that's where our food is going. So we are using food as a catalyst here for social change in underserved communities to strengthen those communities so that young people can learn how to write the CV so that they make them more employable, so that young people can have skills too that make them more employable. Mm-hmm. So that's where our food is going. We are not giving food to create this dependency across the country. We're using food as this impetus, as this lever that creates this developmental initiative in local communities. So when they graduate out of the program, they will get a food parcel, for example, or to keep them in a program, they get food a meal every single day. So that's how we are using food in this way. But I think the important thing that we must stress here is that South Africa has a terrible past. And we have, because of high unemployment, we have a huge amount of inequality in South Africa. So the playing fields just aren't level. And there is this thing across generational poverty that's entrenched, it's institutionalized. And getting people out of poverty, it only works when we create better jobs, when we create better opportunities. And those things are not taking place in our country at the moment. So we do have a terrible past, and we do have people that are vulnerable. In South Africa, we've got 27.5% of our children under five suffer from malnutrition. It's one of the highest in the world, in spite of the fact that we are a developing country. So we have a legacy that we are trying to deal with. Secondly, if we do not feed people, we're going to have an unhealthy workforce that's going to be a greater burden to our health system that is already overburdened. We have this balance on the one end where people need access to food immediately, because there's just no food in the household. But we want to make sure that food is used in a creative way and in a way that encourages and stimulates education and developmental activities in those local underserved communities.
Wow, Andy, I think after this episode, you've definitely given me a lot of food for thought in terms of how I work. Yeah, how I could work with Food Forward South Africa. I mean, I knew of your organization first and foremost as an organization where, as a farmer in your pack house and you've got excess food, you would donate. And I think I work with one of your partners, Hello Choice.
Yes,
One Farm Share. But I think from an individual household perspective, I think I should definitely play a role where that is concerned. So I'll do my research on your website in terms of how do individual households work with your community partner, organizations. Yeah. Yes, because it's something that we could do easily. I mean, a lot of people are frustrated with load shedding. I've thrown a lot of food, not even expired, you know, still in good condition, but, you know, because of load shedding, that I couldn't cook again or whatever the case might be. And it just takes me speaking to my friend to speak to her friend and her friend.
Yes, exactly.
The organization, and we donate food to the organization to get to Food Forward. I mean, yeah, having you on the podcast today was great for me. And I think post this episode, I truly believe that we should do more work as individuals in spreading the word that you do to as many organizations as possible.
Yeah. No, thank you, Mbale. I appreciate it. And that's what it's all about. I think once people hear about the work we're doing and how we are doing it, you know, they are readily available to want to support the work we do, because I do believe that we are making a real difference, not only in underserved communities, but we are making impact into this food loss and waste. Too much food is still being wasted across South Africa in a country where 30 million people experience moderate to severe food insecurity. So, you know, word of mouth is important, and your podcast and other media is important just to share the message of our model, how cost effective it is, and how it can change lives and communities.
Thank you so much, Andy.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.